33-year-old British para-rower, Gold Paris Paralympian and world record holder Ben Pritchard grew up in a Welsh village in an area of outstanding beauty. His sporting career started at the Mumbles Yacht Club, where he learned to sail and develop his competitive edge. However, on the 10th of September 2016, his life changed forever when he sustained a spinal cord injury near the T6 vertebra. He was paralysed from the rib cage down. Ben was treated at the world-famous Stoke Mandeville Hospital, and he says being at the birthplace of the Paralympic movement gave him the confidence he needed to get to where he is now. My name's Lucy Mayer, and I've been speaking with Ben about his training up to the Paris Paralympics last year, the race itself, where he won gold, and Love Rowing, which is the campaign he's launched with British Rowing to help make the sport more inclusive and accessible for all.
In September the 1st, I became the Paralympic champion for the PR1 category, which is the most disabled category in our sport. So I row with my arms and upper back and limited trunk function. So it's not like the rowing that you see on TV, really. I have a boat which has two floats on it, and I'm strapped into my boat from the waist down. And so I won that, and I've spent a lot of time training. Our weekly training schedule is 6 days a week, 2 to 3 sessions a day, and that's 49 weeks of the year. That's kind of how we rotate through the years. So the training doesn't change depending when you're racing. You know, you race where you race over 2,000 metres. This time going to LA 2028, it's a shorter course, so maybe our training will change closer to the games. But we were very lucky because the para team basically got to race the venue 3 times before the event, because French Rowing Association and the centre that the race was held on held like test events for para sports, so we got to go out and try it before we were there. So actually when I arrived for the Paris Games, I already knew where things like the toilets were or the boat sheds were, so I felt very comfortable in the arena, which then I guess helped my performance and crossing the line first.
What was Paris like as a venue?
The whole city was just bouncing. It was so cool. And obviously my first game was Tokyo, which was the COVID game, so we didn't have fans, we didn't have spectators, and the Japanese were great in terms of like the hotel and the village, and on the roads driving to the course they were very supportive, but you didn't have that interaction in the stands. And just on the Sunday for the finals in Paris, we had 20,000 people in the stands, which is just unreal. It's not heard of in my sport. And I know that 1.5 million tickets were sold for the period of the Paralympic Games, which shows there's an appetite for Paralympic sport as well as Olympic sport and able-bodied sport. And, you know, everywhere you went, people were asking, were you part of the Games? Because if you're in a chair, you know, even when I was going to Disneyland with my family, you know, people were asking, oh, have you competed in the Games? Are you here for the Games? And it was that kind of buzz. It was probably similar to what London had. And for me, it's the closest I'll ever have to a home game. So I had a big fan base come out, and yeah, it was just so special.
And you mentioned, obviously, the support for the Paralympic Games. I got the feeling from Paris especially that it was just massive, the crowds, and also Paris was very much behind the Paralympic events.
Yeah, and I think what's great about the Paralympic movement as a whole is it's not just about the athletic performance. And obviously, we've now moved away from, you know, inverted commas, the sob stories and being athletes. You know, we are athletes. I train just as hard as any able-bodied athlete, I can assure you that. I also have to live my life with a disability. But because of that, we can impact social change on the cities that we go to. And during the Games, the Paris mayor did admit that he didn't do a good enough job in terms of accessibility and making Paris accessible for the period the Games are. But what he has done is made a promise that by the next Paralympics in LA, that Paris will become a fully accessible city. So, you know, you have that ability to make real social change on the back of athletic performance, which I think is really important.
Is that something you felt, the city isn't that accessible?
Yeah, well, I couldn't use the metro because a lot of the metros weren't accessible. So luckily, the Paralympics and the IPC, the International Paralympic Committee, put on team buses so we could get buses to and from places. But when I was out of the village and spending time with my family, it was a lot of taxis or a lot of private cars, you know, rather than public transport, which obviously isn't great for the environment, but it was the only way I could get around, so we just had to make it work. But yeah, it's good that the mayor and Andy Parkinson's and everyone has driven that forward, and hopefully we'll make a change going forward.
And I mean, how do you feel about LA?
And obviously everything that's happened with the wildfires at the moment, there's a lot of debate, isn't there, about the cost of hosting the Games and not rebuilding people's houses. And you do feel sorry for those people that are impacted. And, you know, if you're going to go and have a game somewhere, America will put on a party. You know, you can tell that just from the closing ceremony when they live streamed an event to the Paris closing ceremony for the Paralympics. It was just fantastic. So you know they're going to do a good job at making us feel welcome. And hopefully, in terms of accessibility, things will change in LA. I've never been, so I'm looking forward to going. But we'll see what happens. And I do just feel that at the moment, obviously, if I was impacted with my house having burnt down, I'm not sure I'd be too chuffed about the government spending lots of money on hosting the games, but I'm sure things will work themselves out. They always do.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I guess that money is ring-fenced and this event is going ahead, and it takes a long time, as you'll know, to prepare for an event. So the training for LA, do you start straight away the moment you finish one game, or is it just consistent the whole way through?
No, we are very lucky that after the games, we are allowed a period of grace. So depending on the number of games you've been to, we get to have some time off. So this is my second game, so I was allowed 3 months off. If it was your first games, you're allowed a month off. And if you've done more than two games, you're allowed an indefinite period. And then you have to come back next year, basically. But our funding is done on a yearly cycle. So we get funded November to November based off our last year's results. So depending on where I finish this year will depend how much I get paid next year. So, you know, whilst I got 3 months off, you do kind of start to feel the stress about, oh, I may need to get back to some kind of fitness. And I'm an athlete anyway, and I enjoy sport. So even in my 3 months off, I was doing surfing and going skiing and having a good time and swimming and keeping myself fit, but not to the same intensity. But you can't train at the intensity that you're in a games year, because if you did that, you'd burn out. Just like when people burn out in the city working, or people burn out in their jobs or daily lives, if you keep going at that high intensity, you will burn out. So you've got to use it like each year as a stepping stone to the next year. And as they get more and more important, the intensity will ramp.
And I guess there's things you can't do when you're training.
Yeah, this is a very small violin moment, but I'm only allowed to ski once every 4 years, because that they deem that a dangerous sport. And if I get an injury, then it would mean that I couldn't compete and therefore wouldn't be viable. So I'm allowed to do it every 4 years. So this year we had a great holiday to Breckenridge in Colorado, and I went skiing, which was epic. And all my family came, my daughter, my wife, my brothers, their partners, and mum and dad. So it was just an epic Christmas period. So when I get to do them, I make sure I can enjoy them. But it's not just sports I have to stay away from. You know, there's sacrifices in terms of missing friends' weddings, missing friends' stag do's, funerals, christenings, you know, and all, like, just generally catching up. I struggle sometimes with the guilt of wanting to be a good person, a good friend to your people that support you, but also throwing myself in the deep end of my job, and which is rowing. And I've got great friends that do understand it, but it doesn't make it any easier when you can see the unread message or the missed call and you haven't got time to call them back. And I feel really guilty saying that, but sometimes you're just under the cosh that you just need to crack on, you know.
Okay, so it feels like a good point to move on to love rowing. I mean, I don't want to leave the Paralympics behind, because we could talk about that for a long time. But love rowing, this is a project that, you know, you are involved with, and you're trying to make a difference and create accessible rowing projects. I think probably we need to start by talking about accessible rowing projects. Southwest London is synonymous with rowing. You've got the boat race, and people are enjoying the river for all sorts of activities. But do you feel rowing is accessible for everybody?
Well, British Rowing's values, it says open to all, and it is a really core value, and I think they're doing their utmost to change that. But I do think there's this massive elitist facade to the front of rowing, which kind of stops people knocking the door and giving it a go. And Love Rowing is British Rowing's charitable foundation, and they try to make a difference through inclusive and accessible rowing projects for young people, people like myself, anyone from a impoverished background, or, you know, maybe the communities that aren't necessarily typical to rowing communities. You know, they've also got a project at the moment with women that have suffered abuse in their lifetime, and just getting them in a safe place that they can enjoy other companies and some sport. And the reason why I think Love Rowing and the work they're doing is so important is because when I left hospital after my accident in 2016, I initially went back to Swansea, which is where I'm from, and I had a great club kind of put me on the water, no questions asked. They have no facilities. They've got two containers in the back of a Sainsbury's car park. They made a ramp for me to get on the water out of old decking. But it was just the mindset of the people there that allowed me to access the water. And then when I moved back to London to continue working in the city, British Rowing tried to help me find a club. And like you say, Southwest London and Southeast London has got hundreds of clubs on the river. But it took British Rowing an hour and a half's drive from Greenwich to find a club that would said yes. And luckily it's Twickenham, which is just down the road. But Twickenham were the club that said yes to having me train at their club. And whether it was fear of accessibility, fear of safety, fear of having somebody with a disability at their club, because they want to make hopefully out of a good place, want to make sure I was safe, and just too fearful to adapt their club to allow that to happen. But I don't want that to be somebody else's experience. So, you know, myself and the Freemasons of Oxfordshire and Love Rowing have tried to come up with an idea that we're going to try and raise £10,000 to create an accessible project with the help of Love Rowing.
Taking the accessibility out of it for the moment, it's expensive, isn't it? It's an expensive sport.
Maybe not so much as a able-bodied athlete, because you can go to a club and a club will have boats there. You obviously have to pay a membership to a club, but they will own the boats. But when you come to the adaptive rowing, you have to own your single, which is, you know, they're quite expensive. But not only that, every person has a different impairment or a different disability. So, for example, in my boat, I've got a custom-made seat. Now, I'm very lucky that UK Sport funded that for me. But just to give you like a ballpark figure, it's £2,500 plus for my custom seat. Now, obviously, that's to go to the Paralympic Games and try and win a medal. And I'm sure you can get cheaper seats out there. But that's the kind of level of investment people are having to make off their own backs. There is a group called the Community Adaptive Group, the CAG, in abbreviated commas, and they are a collection of clubs that kind of run adaptive rowing in the UK, but they're very spread out. So there's Maidenhead, Marlow, you've got some clubs in the West Midlands, and then you've got Swansea and then City of Oxford. There's a couple of clubs that do a really good job of it. But compared to the number of rowing clubs full stop, it's a real shame to see that there's only 6 or 10 clubs that are having big adaptive groups turn up. So that's my kind of aim, is to try and leave the sport in a better place than when I found it. And, you know, it's a real shame that in my sport, domestically, the big 5 races, you named a couple earlier, don't have any adaptive representation across any scheme.
With the boat race, it's all able-bodied, and you don't have, where we've got the Olympics and the Paralympics, you don't have that version of the boat race. Is that something that you would like to see?
Getting 8 people together is with a similar impairment is probably difficult. I think that is one of the challenges with adaptive rowing. You've got to find somebody with a classifiable condition, you've got to find people with similar impairments to row in a similar way. Obviously for me, I'd row a single, so it's just myself. But I would like to see more events put on adaptive rowing. You know, Henley Women's is the first major event in the UK to host an adaptive race, and they host a PR3 women's race, which is a great step in the right direction. But hopefully, you know, things like Henley Royal, Head of the River, you know, all of these events will start to catch. There's no reason why I can't go and do the Head of the River other than time it takes me to do the race. So why not try and drive change?
Yeah, I mean, I'm embarrassed. I'd never thought about it until we sat here talking. You know, why have we not got the boat race and then an accessible boat race after it?
Yeah, and if you look, there's a race in America called Head of the Charles, which is on Boston River, and they have an inclusive double event. So it's a way in which adaptive people can enter the race, but I would have to race with an able-bodied partner. So at least I'd have somebody that could steer the course. But, you know, there are races out there that show you can do it. And that CAG group I spoke about earlier, they run a load of domestic races at their local clubs. But it would be great to see, like, the Met and Marlow regattas, or, like I say, the Henley Royal regattas, the big, you know, the big blue ticket regattas going, oh, I'm going to host a para race. I'm not saying it has to be a PR1 race for mine, because they are long races, they're 10-minute races. But the PR3s are a fairly adapted at jumping in and out of able-bodied boats. So why not get a PR3 category racing?
It says here that you're trying to raise £10,000. The prices and the costs you've just told me, that although £10,000 is a lot of money, it seems like a really small amount. Is £10,000 going to be enough for what you want to do?
It'll definitely be enough to get the project up and running. And then hopefully the idea would be that the project then would become sustainable and self-sufficient. But this is just to try and help Love Rowing open the door and get a project started in our local area. You know, we will talk about the Freemasons, because I'm a very proud Freemason. And I joined at a time where I was a bit lost, you know. I'd left my job in the city because I was struggling to live in London in the wheelchair, and I moved back home, and my best friend at the time said, have you ever thought about Freemasonry? And the honest answer was no, because like most people, I thought it was a bit weird, you know, and didn't know enough about it. And he said, well, don't worry about any of that stuff, but for 7 nights a year, you can have a dinner with me and we can catch up. So now are you interested about the Freemasons? And I was like, yes, okay, that makes sense. Lives are really busy. We don't get to see each other 7 times a year anyway. So let's get it in the diary and let's do it. And I've never looked back. You know, from that moment, I've met hundreds of people that you just share a similar passion to and ultimately want to get to know and spend time talking to, you know. And there will be people that have their unbiased conscience against Freemasonry. There'll be people that are supportive of it. But my experience is that we do a lot of good. We're the second largest donator to charities outside of the National Lottery. And this is just an example where Oxfordshire, and particularly the Regattas Lodge in Henley, who are based around rowing, you know, Regattas Lodge is based around people that row and use the river, are trying to do good in their local community and trying to make Henley a more accessible rowing centre through their links with myself. You know, and I met Stuart just in October after the games, and he was like, well, let's just link these two together. So that's kind of what we're doing, which is, I'm really proud to champion that, because I don't think that's a known fact about the Freemasons. And they're not going to want to be tapped on the back and be patted on the back for the work they do, but it should be chatted about more.
You want more, well, you want to hear from maybe listeners who could support your campaign, us rowing clubs, but also just people who use the river and who are interested, I guess, as many people as possible.
Yeah, exactly that. You know, like you say, we're a hotbed for rowing in this area. So there will be rowing clubs that maybe have got questions about how do they make their club accessible? How do they open their doors? You know, a lot of the time, there'll be a lot of red tape in the way, and people think that they have to do a load of, you know, health and safety checks and all that kind of stuff. But actually, if they spoke to somebody with a disability to say, what do you need to access my club? We were just talking about the fact that Radio Jackie's in an old post office and there's a big step into the studios. You know, you didn't say I couldn't come here and do this studio. You just said, just to let you know it's there. Is that okay? And I said, yeah, I can get up it, no problem at all, you know? And that's kind of the examples that rowing clubs might need help with.
Yeah, because do you think that puts people off and that makes people worried?
Yeah, I think they're consciously worried of doing the wrong thing. You know, there's this cancel culture out there now, isn't it? And everyone's worried about doing the wrong thing, saying the wrong thing. And actually, sometimes if you're just trying to do good, you know, speaking to somebody and offering help is probably a lot better than saying no. And I think that's kind of what the message I want to get across to these clubs, that is that accessibility isn't infrastructure, it's a mindset. So if you have an open mindset, okay, we may not be perfect, but we can make it work, then that's probably good enough.
The majority of our buildings are, let's face it, old. I think it does worry people if they operate out of a particularly old building. And then the costs as well, if they think there's a big cost involved to changing and adapting, but it's giving people the option.
Yeah, and like I said, City of Swansea Rowing Club train out of two containers in the back of a Sainsbury's car park. My ramp was made out of decking and two by four blocks. And now we've been given some equipment from a building site. So we've got a plastic ramp that helps me get on the water. At Twickenham, I showered in a garden seat in the shower. A rope was tied to the back of my wheelchair to help me get down the steps. They did have a lift, which was very helpful. But the club were very willing to help. And they knew that they weren't perfect, but they were willing to front up and be like, we're not perfect, but what can we do to help you? And that's the kind of attitude we need to get out there. And if we go to society as a whole, when I'm wheeling around supermarkets, kids are dying to ask questions or dying to look at the wheelchair, or they're just interested because it's not often you see somebody in a wheelchair, right? And the parents will pull the kids away from asking that question, which then I think teaches you subconsciously that speaking to somebody or asking a question about disability is a no-go, when actually I think it's everyone's prerogative to be able to ask a question, but it's also my prerogative to say no. And I think that's kind of the message I get out there, is that for those people that run clubs, for volunteers, for people that use the waterways, that want to kind of get involved in this big push from Regattas Lodge and Love Rowing, is if you think you can help but you don't know how, just ask, and I'm sure there'll be a way. It'll be donations, volunteer of time, maybe you have equipment that you can loan a club, or maybe you know of some old equipment going around that Love Rowing could use. You know, that there are so many ways that people can get involved. It's not just about the financial backing. You know, I will say that we have currently raised £5,000 of this £10,000 target, so that's through the thanks to Regattas Lodge, who put a big chunk up of the money. And then what's exciting with Freemasonry at the moment is in Oxfordshire, it's celebrating its 300th year, its tercentenary, which is pretty special. And as a back of that, Oxfordshire loved what I was doing, loved what Stuart and Regattas Lodge were doing, and they've matched the funding that we've raised already. So there are people willing to support this, and I think there's momentum gathering. So hopefully, you know, your listeners in the South West London that have clubs and use the waterways can also help.
How can people get involved? Is there a website they can go to, or
look up Regattas Lodge online, either through the Oxfordshire Freemasonry website or through Regattas Lodge itself? Then they'll be directed to our club secretary or the club treasurer, and they'll be able to get people in touch with us properly.
For anyone who feels they can give help and support to Ben and love rowing, or who's interested in the Freemasons' work in that area, please contact Neville Burr, the Secretary of Regattas, by emailing nneon@onetel.net. I'm Lucy Mayer, reporting for Radio Jackie.